Hey everybody, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM Lexington Community Radio, coming to you live from the beautiful north side of Lexington, Kentucky, here in the gorgeous 100 plus year old STEAM Academy, formerly known as the Johnson Elementary School.
Yes, 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 yes.
Yes. My name is Chuck.
I'm Ben.
And we're with you as we are every Friday from noon to 2, bringing you cool stories from people doing amazing things with a unique connection to the bluegrass. And with us in the studio, we have a very special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Why am I here? I'm Jack Patty. I do morning radio on WVLK, and this is very neat, very cool, and I'm very honored to be here. Thank you. And I grew up in the north end of Lexington.
Oh, yeah?
Went to Yates Elementary, went to Bryan Station, what used to be called in the ancient days Junior High, mm-hmm. and then Bryan Station Senior High my sophomore year, and then we moved to the south end, and I ended up at Tate's Creek. But my roots are all around here. Literally. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, the area's changed quite a bit, don't you think?
It has indeed. Some good, some bad, but mostly good. When I was a kid, of course, I'll be 65 in a couple of weeks, to give you some perspective as to where I come from mentally. And when I was a kid, I would actually come home from school on school bus. My mom worked, and I would get out of the school bus and board a city bus and go down to downtown Lexington on the city bus, go to a place called Shackleton's and take a trumpet lesson.
Wow.
Now, I'm maybe 7-8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that.
On the bus,
on
by
the
yourself.
Bus, by myself, right.
That's unheard of now.
Exactly.
Your parents would be arrested nowadays. Mm-hmm.
They would be arrested. They'd be in jail. And go down to Woolworth's or McCrory's or one of the 5 and 10 cent stores on Main Street, have a soda, get back on the bus, go home, and did that for years. And so that's what the North End or the whole city was like.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, obviously, a lot of things have changed. And mm-hmm. exactly what you said, Ben, parents would get arrested for letting their kids do that today.
Now, did you go to UK? Did you go
I never went a day of college. I walked into a university one time and didn't like the smell, and so I walked right out.
Was it the sawdust
I just didn't
people partying?
Yeah, something about
was it
yeah.
smug? Was
yeah,
it that?
It was, man. I have been very, very blessed, very fortunate to have a long... next year, 2018, it will be 50 years.
It's amazing.
I started in 1968 as a junior in high school. So, you know, today I go in and get up every morning at 4 o'clock, and when that alarm goes off, I don't want to mislead you into thinking that I think, oh, that's wonderful. But I love to go to work every day.
Yeah.
And so I would love for everybody in the world to have that kind of situation, regardless of what they do. And I know most people don't, but have that sort of a relationship with what they do. I still like going to work every day. I still love my job. I love the people I work with. And thank goodness that I was given that opportunity. I went to Yates Elementary. And then back then it was junior high, which was 7, 8, 9. And then my sophomore year, I went to Bryan Station. So everybody that I had gone to school with, I was going to school with in my sophomore year. Then my mother announced that we were moving to the south end of town.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to have to go to Tate's Creek. And I said, ain't no way. And I was, sophomore, so I was 15, 14. And she said, well, yeah, you are. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, no, I'm not. And she said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, I'll walk to Bryan Station.
Wow.
Which lasted not even one day.
That is a long, long
That's
day.
A long walk.
It's a long
yeah,
walk.
Yeah. But as it turned out, and this is all because somebody was looking out for me, early on at Tate's Creek, I had a speech and drama class, and he was actually a student teacher. He wasn't the teacher of the class. He was a student teacher. Was in radio and TV in Lexington. And I had already decided years before that's what I wanted to do with my life.
Now, how did you decide that? Because I heard a little story about that.
There's a couple of stories going around. One is when I was about 5 years old, there was back when they used to record, TV commercials for cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
There was an old commercial for, I want to say Camel. It could have been Lucky or Pall Mall. I think it was Camel Cigarettes. And it was just shot, of course, black and white TV in the dinosaur years.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy sitting there smoking a Camel, and these two huge turntables on either side of him and this little board, and he was so cool. He had that cigarette going and talking on this big microphone that was coming down from the ceiling. And I thought at the time, I thought, that's what I'm going to do. And then when I was, I don't know, 14 years old, I had taken piano lessons and had a lot of interest in music. And I started joining, because there's so many of them, garage bands. And everybody back then in the 60s, you didn't have to have any talent. You needed to know three chords to play.
It hasn't changed.
Yeah, nothing. Yeah,
no, it's the same thing. Well, so I was in a bunch of garage bands. And one of those bands, again, I was 14, 15. We had a gig, and I'm pretty sure saying it was Versailles, but it doesn't matter. Versailles or Nicholasville. And there was an afternoon guy on WVLK, which is where I work now, and his name was Denny Mitchell, and he did a show called Denny's Den, and it was very, very popular. And Denny had some run-ins with DUIs and didn't have a driver's license. So this band that I was playing in ended up picking up Denny, who was the MC of the show in Versailles or Nicholasville, and I got to sit in the back seat next to him, and I thought I was sitting next to Gene Autry. Seriously, it was like, this is so cool. And I was just, I know he was like, get this kid away from me, but I was so interested to pick his brain and so on. And he said, well, you can come down. They were in the Phoenix Hotel at the time, which is long gone, and top floor. And he said, come down after school, blah, blah, blah. And so I started doing that when I was about 14, 15, and just fell in love with the business. So fast forward to when I was a junior at Tate's Creek, where I didn't want to be, I met a guy named Terrell Whitaker, and he's been gone for a while, but I don't know where I'd be today without Terrell Whitaker. I don't know what I'd be doing. But again, he was a student teacher, not even the teacher in this class. But he said, is anybody in here interested in radio or television?
He was a drama teacher, right?
Yeah, no, it was a drama class, but he was the student teacher from the UK. He was, getting his hours. And he says, anybody in here care anything about radio and TV? Well, two of us raised our hands. And so he pulled us out of class after class or whatever, and he said, why don't we start a radio station here in the high school
at Tate's Creek?
And I said, oh, yeah. So he begged, borrowed, and stealed a bunch of equipment, and we literally got a closet. It was a closet. And we would broadcast at lunchtime over the intercom. And Terrell told the other fellow and I, he said, when I feel like you guys are ready, he says, it's difficult to break into this business, and I'm going to help you. So he said, when I feel like you guys are ready, I'm going to take you and introduce you to somebody somewhere and try to get you on the air somewhere. And so that Christmas of that year of my junior year, which would have been about 1968, and I think of that and think, man, was that a long time ago. But anyway, he came to me one day, kind of poked me on the shoulder and said, we're going to go get you a job.
Wow.
This was around Christmas time. And so me and my teacher skipped school together, which was, that was pretty bad.
And again, something probably you can't get away with today.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm sure you could. I'm sure you, that's a good point. But anyway, so we drove to Georgetown. There was a little radio station over there, 1580 AM, and it was formerly a rock radio station, which would have been a lot more interesting, but it had since turned to country. And it was Top Gun Country, 1580 on the dial. I didn't care, because all I wanted to do was be on the radio.
It's WAXU, right?
WAXU, you're exactly right. And so I was taken into the studio, introduced to the guy who was on the air, who was the morning guy. His name was Jack Webb. Introduced, of course, to the man who owned the station, who hasn't been gone too long. I went to his funeral 3 or 4 months ago. His name was Robert Johnson, and I was scared to death of him. And,
it's always a good motivating force, though.
Exactly. Yeah, I thought he was a monster. For no reason except that he was the boss. And so they took me into the studio, this little studio that was in this facility on Ironworks Pike that was just a garage, really. It was a cinder block building that was, Your facilities here are much better, And so they took me, introduced me to Jack Webb, and of course I didn't have a demo tape or anything. I'd never had a job, and Bob Johnson, the owner of the station, said to Jack Webb, he said, "We're going to let Jack take over me, Jack. We're going to let Jack take over for a little bit. We're going to go into my office and we're going to listen to him."
Wow!
And out they walked,
sink or swim.
That, talk about thrown into the deep end of the pool. And I would give big money to have a tape of that because I'm sure it was absolutely horrible.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, how'd it go?
I'm sure it was terrible.
Yeah.
But I was in there for 20 minutes, and then they came in and pulled me out of the pool, and Bob Johnson said, I can use you on Sunday mornings. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I was just granted a gift from heaven.
And how old were you?
I was 16.
16, wow.
And so Sunday mornings, 6 a.m. to noon, and it was mostly tape recorded, which we had tapes, religious program, mm-hmm. Programming. But I would, in some places, in the course of the morning, I would come on and give the weather and mm-hmm. Maybe a station identification or something. And that was plenty for me mm-hmm. at that time. And that worked out okay. Did that for a while. And less than probably a year, I was asked if I'd like to have a weekend show, and I said, of course, yes. Mm-hmm. And so they would put me on from noon until sign-off on Saturday. Now, this was a station that was authorized to be on the air from local sunrise to local sunset. Mm-hmm. So as the days got shorter, the hours of operation got shorter. Makes sense. In the summertime, they were on until 9 o'clock at night. In the wintertime, they were signing off at 5:30 in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. But on Saturdays, I would work in the summer. I was, you know, 15, 16 years old, work on the summer from noon until 9.
Oh, wow.
All live. And again, that was one of these thrown into the deep end of the pool to figure out what I'm doing.
How much of that was you talking?
It was playing country music, and a lot of it was talking. And I'm sure I was terrible, but they just gave me the opportunity. And I'm so grateful for it. So that's how I got started. And then by the time I was a senior, they had given me an afternoon show. And I was on every afternoon after school. Now, where I'm in Tate's Creek, they're in Georgetown. Mm-hmm. And I had to drive from out there where Tate's Creek is to Georgetown, Kentucky, out on Ironworks Pike, to do an afternoon show at like 3 o'clock. And I think I completely blew off my last class of the day that year because mm-hmm. I knew that's what I wanted to do. And who cares?
Yeah.
You know, stupid, but really, in hindsight, it was kind of stupid. But so I worked, when I was a senior in high school, 16, 17, I was working from about 3 o'clock in the afternoon until whatever that sign-off was. Summer was 9 o'clock, winter was 5:30. And then Saturday from noon to sign off, and Sunday morning I was doing 7 days a week. That's something else that somebody would probably go to jail for. Yeah. You know?
Oh, yeah, 100%, absolutely.
But that's what I wanted to do. That was what I wanted to do. And mm-hmm. and I'm not here to criticize millennials or anything, but
oh, go ahead.
Okay. Years later, again, fast forward a few years, I ended up being the program director, and I was a terrible person in management for 1 year at WLAP. I only tell you that because it's way out of context here. But I was actually in a position of hiring and firing, and I hated it, and I was mm-hmm. terrible at it, and that's why I only lasted a year, and I was fired. But the ethic, the work ethic, or the desire, or the whatever you want to call it, had changed so much from when I got in at 16 and when I became, quote-unquote, management at, I don't know, 28 or 29. There were kids coming in that had degrees in broadcasting or communications or something mm-hmm. at UK and other mm-hmm. colleges going, well, I'm here. And okay, good. We don't have any jobs for you.
Yeah.
Well, that's not what they told me at school. And then when we start talking about expectations of salary, it was like, I don't make that much.
Yeah, right.
Well, so it changed.
Well, Jack, it certainly seems like, your unorthodox path to get there has certainly worked out.
It has worked great. I'm so thankful.
And you've been on the air continuously here in Lexington since 1974.
Well, actually, 1968 was when I started in Georgetown, and I was here in Lexington, changed from WAXU to an adult contemporary station that was WBLG, was there for a couple of years, and then went to Florida, because here's kind of, I don't know if it's interesting, but went to Daytona Beach, Florida on vacation with a friend of mine, David Sullivan, who was Claude Sullivan's son. Now, any older listeners will remember Claude Sullivan was the voice of the Wildcats mm-hmm. before Kaywood Ledford. Mm-hmm. And he was also the voice of the Cincinnati Reds. Mm-hmm. Well, his son David was the news director at WVLK. I was working across the town at WBLG, but we were friends. And so he and I went to Florida together on a vacation and went to Daytona Beach, and he was 2 or 3 years older than me. He was one of the first announcers on ESPN, too, with. But anyway, so we were there, and we were a couple single guys, a couple of wild swinging guys. You know, we were like, hey, yeah, I was like 17, 18. He was maybe 22, and we were a couple of wild and crazy guys. Right. But I decided real quickly, hey, this is where I need to be. And so when I came back to Lexington, I decided that I want to move to Florida. I'm, you know, again, 18 years old, just out of high school. Don't care anything about going to college because I've decided my path is set. Here's what I want to do. So there was a thing called, of course, this is years before internet and all that stuff, but there was a thing called the International Rate and Data or Standard Rate and Data. It was a catalog as, you know, maybe 6 inches thick, like a Sears catalog, that had every radio station in North America in it.
Wow.
And it gave their rates, and it gave where they are, and all that stuff. So I came back to Lexington, and I got myself a Standard Rate and Data, because all the radio stations had them, and started looking. Volusia County, which is where Daytona is. I decided Daytona is where I want to be. And so Volusia County.
Was this in the middle of December? Is that when you decided Daytona?
No, it was actually when we got back and we were there in the summer. So it was probably about,
okay, so
August.
Not too bad.
And so I start calling. I start calling radio stations in Daytona Beach, Florida, looking for work, and just keep striking out. You know, who are you? You know, blah, blah, blah. So I'm thinking, as an 18-year-old thinks, there's probably some small radio stations around there that would consider me. So I go back to the Standard Rate and Data catalog, and there's a place about 20 miles just to the west of Daytona called, it's in Volusia County, same county, called DeLand, D-E-L-A-N-D. Well, DeLand is kind of like, I would say, Danville.
Okay.
There's a private kind of hoity-toity school there, kind of like Center.
Yeah.
And it's called Stetson University. Real highbrow. Didn't know any of this. So anyway, there's two radio stations in DeLand. So I call a number absolutely cold out of the Standard Rate and Data book. And I said, I'm a radio announcer in Lexington, and I'm interested in relocating in your community. I'm talking to the general manager. And he says, well, I'll tell you what. He says, I've got a guy that's getting ready. He does afternoons for us. He's getting ready to go to Europe for the summer. And I had explained to the guy, I was really up front, and I probably wouldn't be today. I wouldn't be that honest, but I said, I really want to work in Daytona, but there's nothing over there.
Yeah.
But so I want to, which is stupid. Yeah. But anyway, so this guy says, his name was Brian Tolby. He says, okay, now I got a guy that does afternoons for me. He's going to Europe for the summer for 3 months. And he said, if you'll come and do that for us, I will either keep you on, or I'll find you a job in Daytona. I know all those guys over there. Okay. So I said, okay, I'll send you a tape and a resume. Back then, you sent a tape, an air check, literally on tape, that's edited, the music's edited out, and a resume. And he said, oh, you sound okay.
Wow.
I said, what? He said, oh, you sound okay. Yeah. What about a week from Monday? I said, to start? He said, yeah.
Wow.
So I said, okay. So I pack up this little Carmen Ghia convertible, this little Volkswagen Carmen Ghia, with everything that I own, and I head off. I give my 2 weeks, you know, deal at the station, and head off to Florida. And I'm going down to Florida. I'm 18 years old, and I start thinking about this whole ordeal and think, I just gave up what I had. I have everything that I own in this car to a guy that I've never seen before. And I don't have any idea if he owns that radio station. He told me he did. It could be just like the biggest joke in the world. And I'm traveling 900 miles to this new job. And I really did. It just hit me. You're an idiot. And what Brian, the guy that hired me over the phone, sight unseen, said, go to Daytona. We have a trade out, which means we give these people advertising in trade for rooms. He said, we have a trade out with the Treasure Island Hotel. It's on Daytona Beach. And I thought, this sounds good. And so by the time I come from Lexington, I'm coming into Daytona Beach. It's probably 2 a.m. I can't see straight, even though I'm young. That's a lot of driving. And I'm thinking, I have just made the biggest fool out of myself. And there probably isn't a Treasure Island. And I'm going down A1A, you know, wall-to-wall hotels, named everything in the world, and I'm looking at all the signs, and like an oasis, the treasurer.
Dun, dun, dun.
2 o'clock in the morning, I'm thinking, what? Now the next thing I got to come again overcome is if they've ever heard of Brian Tolby, or here's the call letters of the station. You'll love this. W-O-O-O. W-O-O-O. Woo Radio.
Wow.
And so I walk in there at 2 in the morning, and I say, I am here. Wow. And I'm Brian Tolby, and he kind of looks at me like, who in the hell is he? And I say, at W-O-O-O. And he said, oh, yeah, I think we have a room for you. So thank you.
Yeah, all right.
Okay, so I get settled in my room. I get up the next morning. I have to find a place to live. So I, when I get the room and the place is there, I figure this is legit. Mm-hmm. And so I go across the street from the Treasure Island to a little, just a little greasy spoon and have some breakfast. And buy a Daytona Beach Journal because I'm thinking I need to find a place to live.
Mm.
So there's this efficiency apartment and a phone number. And this is back in the days before your guys' times where there were pay phones. And you put a, I think it was a dime. Mm. And so I go outside of this little restaurant and I put this dime in the thing and I call the number. And this young guy answers and I said, I'm looking for an apartment. And he said, where are you? And I said, do you know the Dandy restaurant? And he said, yeah, I know exactly where it is. And I said, well, I'm on the payphone. He said, turn around and wave at me.
Wow.
And I turned around, and there just, I mean, like, I don't know, 50 feet away was this two-story little dimpy, dumpy apartment. Mm-hmm. And he's standing there going, waving. And I'm like, this stuff is like falling in place.
Fates are smiling down.
And so that's where I ended up living. And I stayed there for 3 years and eventually came back to Lexington via Paducah. But I tell you what, man, I am so blessed to work in this wonderful, wonderful, wonderful business that I know has changed. Mm-hmm. And it's some of it's better. You know, some of it's better. A lot of it's not as good. Yeah. You know.
Well, what's better and what's worse nowadays?
Well, I think the internet and all that stuff, I'm going to be 65 in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. So that's how old I am. And, you know, I'm not one of these guys that, you know, mumbles and grumbles about all you new age. I think it's wonderful. I mean, the work that we do today is so much easier than in my day. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially when it comes to production.
Yeah.
No reel to reels.
Oh, no reel to reels.
No cassettes. With actual razor blades.
Oh, and I did it for years and I loved it. But yeah. I mean, today it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. What for people that are thinking, what are they talking about? Used to be everything was on reel to reel tape. And if you did editing, which was literally splicing tape together, you had a straight edge razor. And you had this thing called an editing block or a tape block, and you physically put the tape in there, and you actually cut the tape, and you had to figure out what you're editing to. Mm. And I know that's just ridiculously complicated, but it was.
Yeah.
But it was also fun.
Yeah.
But now you what took an hour to edit down, you could do, what do you think, Ben? In
5 minutes, maybe
easy,
10.
Yeah. Easy, while you're, you know, drinking a cup of coffee.
Absolutely.
So that way it's better. The way it's not better, in my opinion, is radio stations were licensed to communities by the Federal Communications Commission. And their objective, you had to go, you know, get a license and all that stuff, was to serve those communities. Just exactly what you guys are doing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Exactly.
Yes.
I mean,
but we're a rare breed now.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
For sure.
And then, you know, I don't want to get political here, but Ronald Reagan deregulated all of America when he was president. Mm-hmm. And some of that was good.
Yeah.
It really screwed up the radio business, mm-hmm. in my opinion, because all these prerequisites in order to have a license went away. What you guys are doing is serving the community. We don't have to do that anymore. We make as much money as we want.
Without a doubt. And the limit on how many licenses company can own, that's the biggest thing.
That's the biggest
thing. That got revoked, you know?
Yeah. But so as a result, what happened was all these small communities like DeLand, Florida, where I worked, went away. They didn't go away. I mean, the frequencies are still there. They said, to hell with DeLand, Florida. We're going to serve Daytona and make more money.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're going to serve Orlando and make more money. So all these little independent kind of stations that were in these small markets, and around here you could say Nicholasville, Danville, Georgetown, where I started, all those said, oh, there's a lot more advertising money to be made in Lexington. We're not going to serve Georgetown anymore. Mm. You know. And so what happened in essence was all these small towns lost their radio stations, and that's too bad.
What kind of differences have you noticed since the fairness doctrine has gone away?
It's
a complicated subject.
It's very, very complicated. Again, it's one of these kind of things that it depends on how you look at it. Mm-hmm. And from one perspective, it's like, yeah, okay, that's a good thing. And from another perspective, it's like, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do a daily talk show every day, and I've done that for many, many years at WVLK. And it's the same kind of, depending on where you are in the political spectrum.
Yeah, this is kind of an equal opportunity for left and right. That
right.
went away in, what, 87, 88?
87, I think, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you used to actually have to be fair.
yeah, right.
It doesn't have to be anymore. And in the realm that I work, and I'm not knocking what I'm doing, but AM talk radio has pretty much leaned to, I don't want to say extreme right, because it's not, but it's right, Republican, conservative radio.
Definitely. Yeah.
And I will say this, I've worked at WVLK with one exception of a year that I went to WLAP from 1975 to now. I've never been told how to handle a subject.
Mm-hmm.
I never have. Nobody's ever told me. I'm a registered independent and have very little interest in politics, which is weird for a talk show host. But I have never, ever, one time, and this goes back to a previous owner even, been told you're too liberal, you're too conservative, you need to take this position on this subject. Never. To this day.
Well, that's amazing. And, you know, I think it's phenomenal, you know, because now there's so much guidance, so much nationally syndicated programming, too,
right.
that, you know, I think the actual occupation of a local DJ with local information is pretty rare. And so
it's very rare.
And so, Jack, I wanted to ask you kind of with that monopolization of radio and that shift to kind of this nationally syndicated programming to cut
right.
costs and
right.
eliminate these local DJs. Do you think the occupation of a professional DJ is a dying breed?
Yep. I don't have to think about it. And it's really funny because I had an email this week, and I get them about two or three times a year. Sometimes they're young, and sometimes they're middle-aged, and sometimes they're older. But I got an email just this week, and I'm going to meet with her at the station a week from Friday, a lady. She says, I'm 45 years old. I'm through with what I'm doing now. I feel like I've done all I can do, and I don't even know what she's doing. And I've decided radio is going to be my second career. Will you talk to me? And I've never turned away anybody who said that, and never will. So we're going to meet, but I'm going to be negative as hell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are no almost no opportunities
yeah.
anymore. And to say anything less would be doing this woman a disservice. And so I, you know, probably the greatest opportunity in radio now is in engineering, and nobody wants to do that.
Yeah.
That's hard work, and there aren't very many of them.
yeah.
When I started at VLK in 1975, we had two radio stations and five engineers.
Mm-hmm.
Today
wow.
we have five radio stations mm-hmm. and one engineer.
Wow.
That's five radio stations that are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You got to keep them on the air. And you ought to, and in our situation right now, William is amazing. He's our engineer.
Yeah, shout out to William.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, William,
works his butt off.
Bless your heart, man. I wouldn't have your job for all the money in the world. plus, he's been, you know, renovating and new
yeah,
equipment
yeah.
and all that. But that's where the future is. I mean, if you really want, if you're just looking for a job, but nobody wants to do that. Everybody wants to be a star,
mm-hmm.
and I don't blame them. And I wouldn't be in this business if I didn't have an opportunity. And I want to qualify that. I don't in any way, shape, or form think I'm a star. But everybody wants that recognition of having their own radio show. I don't blame them. That's what I wanted.
Well, you can kind of do that yourself nowadays. Would that be
that's
kind of
true.
Your advice? Just do
yeah.
a show
yeah.
and put it up
that's
and
good.
See what happens.
With podcasts and internet
yeah.
radio, it's
and
very
see,
more,
there's another,
more.
That's another way that it's yeah. that it's good.
It's more democratic, but it also gives you more options so that you have to go through them all to find the good stuff, too.
Right.
So everything, I guess, has a double-edged sword to it, you know?
You know, and everybody's got to decide, and I'm at the place in my life that I have to do this, is when it's time to be done.
Mm.
And I love my job, and I love coming in there every morning, and I have a contract that goes through November of next year. I'll be 66, and I have to think, is it time to give it up? And what I'm going to base that on is two things. Am I relevant? Which, that's the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm.
Can I be relevant at 66 to a 40-year-old? And if I can't, then it's time to hang it up.
Mm-hmm.
And here's why I say that, and you guys will understand this. Agencies that place advertising, and that's how we make our money, mm-hmm. are interested in a 25 to 54 demographic, mm-hmm. period. Mm-hmm. Used to be, if you sold Cadillacs, you were interested in a 65 or, say, 45 to plus demographic. Nobody buys any demographic anymore mm-hmm. for agencies 25 to 54. So if you're not appealing to that group, you're not going to get any advertising. You're not going to have a job. Okay, can I be at 65 relevant to you guys? This is a great way to put it. Well, do I talk about stuff that
I think so. I mean, I listened sure. to your interview with Rand Paul, and I thought it was pretty relevant.
Okay, but that's what. So number one, am I relevant, and am I still enjoying it? Mm-hmm. And if those are true, and if the radio station still want me, do I have enough of an audience to you know sort of justify my salary? But that's people.
And we all know what 65 means.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You get a few checks.
Except the problem is, in my case, I was born in 1952. I got to be 66 to get. And you guys, I don't know if you'll even ever see
yeah.
Social
Maybe,
Security.
Yeah. I'll be, frankly,
I hate to say this, but I'll be surprised if you do.
We might get an IHOP gift certificate.
Maybe.
That might be it.
Exactly.
Well, I think the full amount.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's amazing that you're taking that humble approach to self-awareness. Because I think a lot of folks don't. Like you're talking about, the egotism gets in the way.
It gets in the way. Mm-hmm. And the best interviewer that I ever heard, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, in my life was Larry King. I mean, there was nobody better. You know why? Because he listened to the answers.
Right.
He didn't have the set group of questions, and so many interviewers today do. And if I say to you, Ben, what do you like to do in your spare time, and what's your favorite color?
Like, well, I'm colorblind, Jack.
Yeah. I say, Ben, What do you like to do in your spare time? And you say, I like to play tennis. And I also like the color blue. Well, mm-hmm. and then I go to my list here and I say, my next question is, what's your favorite color? Mm-hmm. I just blew the whole interview because I didn't hear what you said. And the really good interview.
Well, you look silly. Yeah,
and look silly. Yeah, so a really good interviewer. And the second best, in my opinion, in my lifetime, is Johnny Carson. Mm. But they both do the same thing. They ask questions. They listen to the answers. And the answer will lead you to the next question. Mm. You don't have to have a bunch of questions. Mm-hmm. You know, and so Larry King was the king of interviews until he got too old and he didn't realize when it was time to go. And so as a result, it's, you know, I'm so sorry because he was one of the best interviewers ever.
He really was,
ever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And some of his, and I don't even mean early stuff. I mean, he was good until he was 80.
Yeah.
But he didn't leave when he's, and now they're talking. Have you heard that he might want to come back and do the first interview, I just heard it this morning. Help me out here because now I'm drawing a blank. But anyway, he had told their OJ.
Oh, wow.
That's what it is. Larry King, who's now older than dirt,
mm-hmm. yes,
wants to do the first interview with OJ. Well,
wow.
Hell, I do too. You know, but you got to realize when your time's done. And I hope I'm smart enough to do that.
Well, that's amazing, Jack. And just in case you're joining us, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU. And we're in the studio with Jack Patty, you know, long-term Lexington radio personality. And, you know, we're talking about radio and, you know, being relevant. I just want to ask you, Jack, kind of what is your day like?
I get up at 4 and take a shower and get ready to come into the studio. Get there about 4:30 because I don't have any traffic to deal with and I live close to the station. And then I have some prep services that makes me funny, and I'll admit that. I'm not nearly as funny without writers, mm-hmm. but I have a couple of prep services that I subscribe to that I download, and I've got, you know, just a lot of stuff to download online. Mm-hmm. And then I've got to spend maybe, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes setting up the log, which is what Ben does for us.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of stuff that has to go in the computer. Ben does the log, and it has in where everything is supposed to run and at what time and what commercials. But there's a lot of stuff that you have physically log.
Yeah. And you got your live stuff.
Live stuff and all that, yeah. And so it really literally takes me, and I come in and I really take my time. Mm-hmm. I could do it in 15 minutes, but it wouldn't be any fun.
Yeah.
I kind of crank up slow in the morning and have a cup of coffee or two. And so I get there at 4:30 and then go on at 6. And I take full advantage of that hour and a half just to do the prep stuff that I have to do, read a bunch of stuff that's the news that's breaking and all that. And just to have some sort of feel as to being relevance is everything, and then be ready to go on the air. And I got a great team, and Scott Johnson, who is our news director and who anchors the news in the morning, is just amazing. And if I need something, this morning I needed a story and I forgot what it was, but I said, I could do it, but I'm just busy. And I said, could you print a story, blah. And he does everything like that. And then we've got, traffic, sports, weather, all that stuff, and just have great, great people that do it. And then we've added a female to the mix because our numbers were, they, like everything, they needed some adjusting. And we have a lady that's been in this market forever named Deidre Ransdell, and she's on one of our sister stations on the country station midday, but she voice tracks, so she doesn't have to, be there for 4 hours.
And maybe the most positive person in the city.
My God.
Lifts you up with just her energy and sheer force of nature.
Walks in the room and you feel better.
Yeah.
Just love her. And Brad Munson, who is our traffic reporter, and then he's great. And then we have sports done pre-recorded the night before at Channel 18, which I don't have to fool with. Scott does all that. Scott Johnson does all that. But we have an arrangement with Channel 18 to trade news stories and sports and all that.
Awesome.
And so Scott, our news anchor, I get in at 4:30. He's been there an hour and a half when I get there.
Wow.
Then when I get off the air at 10, from 6 until 9, it's real fast-paced and news, weather, sports, and some funny stuff, and thanks to my prep services. And
I think maybe you got a little bit to do with that, too, Jeff.
But then 9 to 10, and we've done this for years, is telephone talk is more like the standard AM talk format where sometimes we have guests, sometimes we just introduce topics, sometimes we say talk about whatever you want to. But we kind of rely heavily on telephone. But now, the thing that I've noticed, too, again, this could be a plus. Now we have a text line.
Cool.
And we get lots of action on that. Right. And now we have email. And we have a couple other ways that you can communicate with us with social media.
That's awesome.
And so it's not, it used to be we were totally reliant on phones. And it was really funny because in the old days, as in 20 years ago, If I was in there by myself, didn't have anybody as a guest, and I think I've got this great subject, and I'm not getting calls, I would resort to shaming the audience, and it was embarrassing. But what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
And I'd say, well, I've just proven that I've been in this business for 30 years, and I don't know what the hell you people want to talk about. Because I thought this was the greatest subject in the world, and obviously you don't want to talk about it. So, okay, I'm going to take a break, and invariably, they call.
They call.
It was a cheap way to get calls.
But yeah.
Now, generally, I've gotten to the point now, frankly, and nobody's told me to do this or not to do this, but I've gotten to the point now that I don't really care whether they call or not. What I found is, you tend to have real loyal callers that call every day.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily a good thing.
No.
And so if you've got this 8 people that love your show, and it's great that they're there, but if they call every day, it's like,
they become a co-host.
They become a co-host. And it's just, what they're going to say.
Yeah.
So I don't even care if we don't get calls. I don't really judge the value of a show based on the number of calls. I've done fabulous shows without a single call, not very many, and I've done just sucky shows that were lined up. So that's interesting.
So Jack, how long have you had that 6 to 10 a.m. slot on WVK?
Right. I came in 1975 as sort of a utility guy. I was doing production on the weeknights and shows on the weekend. I was hired by Jim Jordan. I don't know if I'd have a job there today if it wasn't for Jim Jordan. I always, if I have an opportunity, I say thanks. Thank you, Jim, for hiring me when I was just a kid and nobody really believed in me too much. And it wasn't too long after that, the afternoon guy. Jim hired me saying, we've got these weird hours and stuff, but as soon as we have a full-time person leave, you can have that shift, whatever it is. Well, the first shift open was afternoons, which is great. And so I did afternoons for a year, and then the morning guy left. And they said, why don't you go to mornings? Mornings, some people might think, why would you want to do mornings? It really is kind of the primo time. You get paid more, and It's higher ratings.
You have the most listeners.
And you got your whole day when you're done.
Right. That's true. That's true. To sleep.
Yeah. yeah, that's very true.
So I went to mornings, and I was there for about 4 years doing mornings. And in 1980, I got this job opportunity or job, you know, proposal from WLAP, who was our big AM competitor. And let's see. So I was born in 52. This was 80. What does that make? 28. Mm-hmm. And he wants to give me the whole AM radio station to run it any way I want.
Wow.
And I'm going, my big move into management, and took it. It was a huge mistake. And as I mentioned earlier, you're either a good manager or you're not. I don't like to tell people what to do, and I don't like to be told what to do. And if that's what is that, if that's your place, lot in life, you don't need to be in management.
Very true.
Yeah.
I
sucked. I was terrible.
You got to stay malleable.
Yeah. Did that give you any kind of insight as an employee of the radio station, as an on-air talent?
Heck yeah. I knew I didn't want to be program director. And program director is in charge of everything that goes on the air. So if you're, I would do, just to give you an example, and this is nothing that anybody that's programmed a station will find the least bit surprising. But I would go in, say, and work noon to 6 on Saturday. And I'd go home and I'd be with my family and having a beer and cooking out on the grill. And then about 7:30, I'd get a call from an all-night guy who would say, So what would I do? Yeah, I'd go in and work all night.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. Ugh. You know, it's kind of like working at the Waffle House. Something that's 24/7.
Yep.
And you're the manager. I have a good friend that did that. And that's why I say that. He said, I'd work 12-hour shift and get a call from the all-night guy going, I ain't coming in.
Wow.
He says, what do you do? You work 24. But anyway, so that I failed at that. I failed miserably at it. I was fired. It's the only job I've ever been fired from, but I deserved it. The problem was I didn't like telling people what to do. So what I would do is I'd just do it. Because people would bellyache and go, hey, would you come in, Sarah? And they go, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And that's a terrible manner.
Delegation.
Delegation.
It's all about.
So I got fired. I was so shocked that this guy, the manager, came in, Jim Allison, and I don't blame him even for a minute. He did me the best favor anybody could have done. This is 1980, and he said, or 81, he said, we can't use you anymore. And I was so stupid. I said, what do you mean? He said, we're going to have to let you go. And I said, when? And he said, right now. Wow. And I said, well, I got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
I got people coming in, and I said, can I tell you? And I had this. I made this long list. And I'm no hero, but I was thought, there are going to be people coming in here to see me, and I'm going to be gone. And so I made this big list. And so what I did is I got in my car, and I had two little children at the time. And I called my wife before I left, because this pre-cell phone. I said, I just got fired. And she said, what are we going to do? I said, I'm going to go to WVLK. So I drove from WLAP out at Radio Park, which was out on Russell Cave Road, to WVLK, walked into Ralph Hacker's office, who was my boss for 5 years before I quit to go to LAP, and I said, I just got fired. And he said, you're kidding. I said, no. And I said, I got nothing. And he said, well, we got nothing. Because they since hired a morning guy, obviously. And he said, but tell you what we'll do, we'll put you on part-time. And so I did the same thing again.
Wow.
And it wasn't too long after that the morning guy. It's really funny, the morning guy that I replaced the first time was hired back, and I replaced him the second time. He was named Dan Kelly. And thank you, Dan, for leaving twice.
It's like musical chairs
exactly,
over there.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, to answer your question in a long roundabout way, I think I started back the second time on mornings in 83 or 4. Anything? And I've been on every day since then, except for vacation days and sick days. I don't take sick days.
Yeah.
I don't understand people.
The people need you, Jack.
I'd rather come in and just be sick and make everybody else.
No, you sit around at home and you feel worse.
I feel worse.
Because
yeah.
you're focusing on how bad you feel.
If I had a real job and I was like a farmer or digging ditches,
yeah.
I take all kinds of sick days. Which would you rather do? Sit at home, feel sorry for yourself, or play music or talk to people on the air? So anyway, it's a great job. I'm so fortunate.
Well, that's awesome. And you know, I know you interview some pretty big name folks, and I know you interviewed Rand Paul and governor before that, and a few other folks. So I'm curious, Jack, when you prepare for an interview with someone like that, what is your technique?
Well, now I go online, and it's so easy. It was harder, you know, because you just had to be creative, but it's so easy. It's so easy. And if you have one question and you listen to the answer, I'm going back, You don't need that much preparation. I never read a book before I interview the author. Mm. They know what the damn book's about.
Yeah.
I don't need to.
Right.
That was a Larry King-ism. Mm. Larry King said that. I don't have to read the book. He knows what the book's
you know,
about.
He knows what he
I always
wrote.
Wondered, yeah. I always wondered about that because Jon Stewart always pretends he read the book and always claims that he does. But how do you find time to read
I don't believe
that?
No, no, you had anyway. Four authors a week.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of an ego thing on the part of the interviewer. I think he wants to say, well, like in chapter 13, let me tell you, one of the funniest things that ever happened, there was a big-time news anchor at night on NBC. It was the Huntley-Brinkley Report.
Mm-hmm.
When
sure,
I was a kid.
Sure.
You guys heard of them, Huntley?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, two guys, co-anchors, and years later, after they had long retired, David Brinkley came to Stetson University when I was just a kid working down there in Florida. And so I was the fan of his. I thought he was great. And so I said, could I cover this thing? And they said, sure. I wasn't in the news, but they said, sure. So, and if you're going to cover it, means you take a cassette recorder and put it up on
of course.
Covering it.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to get in for free and maybe have a chance to talk to him.
I know that game.
Yeah. So after he gave this just really funny and, you know, just poignant speech, he said, does anybody have any questions? And some guy stood up and raised his hand. Now, he was one of these kind of guys that wanted to impress him, David Brinkley, with how smart he was. And when you do that, you ask a question that's six times longer than the answer, right?
Yeah.
And he said, Mr. Brinkley, I have a question for you. In 1963, on that fateful day in Dallas, and I'm thinking,
somebody kick him out.
Yeah.
You meet a lot of those guys in college.
You do. Yeah.
You're not, take my word for it.
Political science major. In that fateful day in Dallas, what is your opinion as how the world would have changed if instead of John F. Kennedy, Nikita Khrushchev had been killed? How would that have changed historically the world? And he did. And this guy, he may have had him planted, but I don't think he said. I don't think that, and he thought for a second, and he said, I don't think Jacqueline Kennedy would have married Aristotle of Nassus and just brought the place down.
Wow. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. But that's the thing. I think sometimes people want to impress people with their knowledge, and the thing that Larry King always did in his prime and the thing that Johnny Carson always did is he made the guest the star. You guys are doing that with me right now. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Well, it's completely unintentional.
We have no idea what we're doing.
No, seriously, you're letting me rant and rave, and you're letting me be the spotlight. If you've got this huge ego, you can't do that.
It's true.
Right.
Yeah.
Very
so
true.
Thank you, guys.
Oh, no problem. Well, thank you.
Have you had any guests on your show that you either thought were going to, this is going to be a great guest, this is going to be a fascinating conversation, that turned out to be a dud, or the other way around, where
always.
You thought, this is just going to be just dead, and it turns out to be
almost always
lively.
Almost always the topics and the guests that I think are going to just, I don't even have to show up, are duds, and you hear crickets, and the ones that are going, they're going to hate this, almost always. And so I gave up a long time ago. Can I tell you about my favorite guest?
Please.
Yes.
We have time.
I
love this
story.
Well,
you're taking away my next question, so I have to really listen.
Okay,
to,
good.
To
it's right, right. Yeah. Don't ask me. Who is your favorite guest?
You didn't listen to the answer.
Yeah, respond conscientiously.
Exactly. There was a guy who was the assistant press secretary to John Kennedy. And this is going to mean a lot more to me than it is to you, because I lived through the Kennedy assassination. And his name was Malcolm Kilduff.
Wow, what a name.
I know, isn't that cool? I'll come back to that. I'll tell you what town, in a small town in Kentucky. And he was the assistant press secretary. On the day, going back to our question for David Brinkley, on that fatal day in Dallas, Pierre Salinger, who was the press secretary, had some other engagement. And so this guy was assigned to accompany the president as the press secretary. Mm. He was two cars in the press pool behind Kennedy when he was killed. So he saw it. Mm-hmm. He saw his head kind of explode.
Yeah.
And as the assistant press secretary, of course, they started out to Parkland Hospital at full speed. You know, it was his job to inform the world as to what's happening. This gives me cold chills to even tell it. They take the First Lady, Jacqueline Kennedy, and Mr. and Mrs. Vice President and Mrs. Johnson into a side room next to the operating room where the emergency doctors are trying to save the president's life, and he stands there next to him. He's the assistant press secretary. He's the voice of what's going on for the country.
Wow.
And they pronounce him dead. They pronounce the president dead. Now, he has to do two things. He has to go in the next room and inform a woman that her husband is dead. She's now a widow. And he has to inform a guy in there that he's now the president of the United States.
Wow.
What a responsibility. And he said, I didn't know what to do. He said, I walked into the room and he said, I didn't know Lyndon Johnson well enough to call him Lyndon. I couldn't call him Mr. Vice President because he wasn't.
Wow.
And he said, I said, Mr. President. And he said, Jackie grabbed her chest and fell down in a chair and, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
But how else could he have done that? And he was the guy that made the announcement and went national with the announcement that the president was dead. And I've had I've had Charlton Heston. I've had these big, I've had Bob Hope. But this guy, Malcolm Kilduff, will always go down as my favorite guest of all time. And back in the day before it got to be, you know, you get to a point that that historical moment is no longer relevant. But back when it still was, when there were a lot of people that were my age around that remembered it, I had him every year in November to tell those stories. And I just loved it. He's been gone for a while, but yeah, he's my favorite.
That's incredible, and I think that's the beauty of radio, is capturing those stories and being able to keep them and tell them and spread them, you know, so that we either learn from them and better our lives or don't make the same mistakes again.
Exactly. And, you know, when I was a kid, I heard all these stories about Pearl Harbor, and I couldn't relate to Pearl Harbor. I wasn't born till 52. And everybody, you know, when I was a little kid, and I don't know what they're talking about, but Pearl Harbor was such a huge deal, and I never understood it until I witnessed Kennedy, and I guess people today witness 9/11.
Yeah.
You know.
And, you know, the commander of the Pacific Fleet during Pearl Harbor was from Kentucky as well.
I don't think I knew that.
Kimmel, really. I just learned that this past week.
Really?
Yeah. It's just pretty fascinating. Yeah. And so, you know, the blame kind of continually, history puts the blame on him. And so he's from Henderson, Kentucky.
Oh, wow.
And they, you know, history says it's his fault.
His fault.
But he didn't get a telegram. And so, you know, they kind of put the blame on him. But just until these last few years, they erected a statue to him because, you know, he continually said, you know, I hope I can go home one day as a hero. And it's kind of a shame that, you know, that obviously he came, when he initially came home, he wasn't, you know, because they put the blame on him. But eventually the story came out, and so they know that.
That's really interesting.
So, yeah, Kentucky, right in the middle of it all.
And there was another part of that story that had to do with Kentucky. Let me think of it. When you get to be almost 65, you have these things in senior moments, but let me think. There was
I have them at 42.
You do have them at 42. Yeah. It's.
But I had them at 22.
I think it's beer consumption. I really don't. I really don't think those brain cells are replaced. I didn't believe that.
So you get a finite number when you.
Those 3 years in Daytona, Joe.
That was 3 years in Daytona. It doesn't matter. It's gone now. But that's okay.
Well, so Jack. Well, first of all, thank you so much for coming in.
This is so much fun. I mean, what's better than sitting and having two guys spellbound by listening to you talk about yourself?
It's true. Well,
why don't we go another hour?
Yeah, well, we could.
I've got some other stories to come, please.
We could do a second edition.
Please don't make me leave.
We'll have you back. We'll have you back.
No, I love it. And, you know, as somebody who loves radio and has been in it, particularly here in Lexington for a long time, you know, I can admire and appreciate your love and also your hard work in accumulating the local information and putting it out in a way that makes it easy for people to digest and makes it a way for people to come home. You know, you're a huge part of their mornings and the rest of their day, you know, and I think that's vital. And I think as, you know, radio stations start to go towards to this national syndicated shows, you lose a lot of that.
You
lose a lot of that local knowledge. And, you know, that's why we exist. That's why, you know, WRFL exists and other non-commercial stations here.
I'll say one thing. I think this is the history of radio, right? The future of radio right here. Because it's going to go, I mean, it's going to go national. Yeah. Everything. Because now you can do talk national. Everything's national. Everything, you know. This right here, what you guys are doing, this is the future of radio, in my opinion.
And it could be. We have some people around the world who email us. Send in things. So, yeah, we're on the internet. We have an app.
Cool.
We've got the radio app. We've got podcasts up. We've got the SoundCloud page.
That's neat.
You guys are on FM now.
97.3.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that because you got a little more crystal clear and stereo.
The problem with our AM signal is because we are licensed to be full power from local sunrise to sunset, and people don't understand that. Before local sunrise and after local sunset, we go to low power. We're 1,000 watts during the daytime on the AM. We're 5,000 watts. And so you can pick us up most places in town, and some, you know, you can get us in Knoxville, and you can get us in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, but the range of AM is really...
But the problem with the low power signal is that you can't get us in parts of Lexington. And so that real clear, nice, crisp FM signal, it's not very powerful, but at least covers the city.
Yeah.
And if early in the morning and you're going to work and it's 7:30 and it's dark.
I hear it just fine coming into work.
Yeah, good.
It gets better and better the closer I get to work.
See, I lived through that time in the early 70s when there was no FM. FM was college-owned, what we used to call long hair music. You know what that means? That doesn't mean rock. That doesn't mean rock. Long hair music meant classical. Mm-hmm. Oh, those long hair stations. And so who listens to FM? And then all of a sudden, in about 1972, 73, rock radio on FM? And it was like the beginning of the end for music on AM radio. Mm-hmm. And that's why everybody had to move to talking news.
Interesting. Oh, wow. So, Jack...
I'm not through yet.
Oh, please.
I'm teasing.
I hope you're not.
I'm teasing.
The last question I want to ask you, and Ben, if you have any other questions, please hop
in. No, not really.
I wanted to ask you if you have any advice for any high school kids out there in Lexington who might be listening, maybe go to Tate's Creek High School.
Or STEAM Academy.
Yeah, or STEAM Academy, sure. Wherever it might be. And if they're interested in radio, you know, what advice would you give to them?
Talk to somebody. And as I told you, I'm going to have the... coffee with a lady a week from Friday, and I'm not going to be I'm going to be real honest with her and tell her we're not the industry that we used to be, but there are still opportunities. It's not dead and not dead yet. And if you've got some talent and you've got mainly you just have to have the passion for it. And that's what, again, I don't want to go back to bashing kids, but kids, when I was that age, I was happy to go out there. I probably started at $1.60 an hour, and I was working 80 hours a week because I loved it. And if they said, we're not going to pay you anymore, I'd have still been there. And so if you're passionate about anything like that, you'll be successful.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and do it anyway.
Do it anyway.
Yeah, do something else for money. And then that's always my advice, is DIY. You know?
I might, next year, if they don't keep me around VLK anymore, I may be like, hanging around here.
Come on by. Our door is always open, Jack.
Absolutely.
Thank you. You know, we love that.
Thank you.
Well, so, who we got coming up next?
We have Reva Williams. Reva's coming back.
She had a show on here for a while.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, she was really good. Show.
She's in a local band called Italian Beaches, who has an album coming out.
She's another band?
She does.
Oh, wow.
She's busy.
Magical woman.
Does she play or sing or both?
She does. She plays and sings.
Yeah, she's really good.
So she's going to come on and talk a little bit about that, and also talk about Take Back Cheapside has event happening coming up soon. So we'll be talking about that as well.
And apologies to Ben Chandler. We ran out of time. Sorry. Sorry about that. Yeah. We'll do better next time.
Poor Ben.
It's okay. He'll live.
Thank you, guys.
Well, nonetheless, Jack, thank you so much for coming
You're so
in.
Welcome.
It's been a pleasure. And nonetheless, we'll be back here in a little bit. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU.